Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good night.
And no more fourth meal.
No, protein bar.
And protein bar brought to you by Chef Robert Irvine's Fortifix. They're going to get us a whole box if you like it.
I do like it a lot.
It's really good, right?
Very good.
You can't OD on it. It has a lot of saturated fat in it, but it is a good meal replacement. Like a delicious chocolate treat.
Tastes like candy.
It tastes like candy. I could do this.
I'm going to eat it as candy.
Well, I don't think...
Throw in the healthy shit.
Yeah, no, just eat it as delicious.
It as candy.
I'll get a box of them. She said she sent us a box. Hey,
I do not want a box of them, just so you know.
Why, because it's dangerous or because you don't like them that much?
I'll eat them all.
Oh, okay, no, I won't give it to you. I'll ration them out to you like my mom does with my dad, where she hides the individual peanut butter containers in a drawer in my brother's room. I'm looking for clothes and I find 50 peanut butter, snack-sized peanut butter things. This is what happens in my house. Hey, guys, Ninth Wonder is in the building, which means Zulu Nation is in the building.
Of course.
Introduce the squad you brought with you.
Jamla's a squad, man.
Jamla Famla?
No. Don't do that.
Sorry. Sorry. See, that's why I asked you to do it. That's exactly why I asked you to do it.
Jamla, would you like me to get a history on the name Jamla first? Would that work for you?
Sure.
What's it called?
Jamla.
Okay. Jamla is a take from Tamla, which is a division of Motown.
I was going to say that. Has anything to do with Tamla.
The epic Marvin Gaye starred exactly. Division of Motown.
Named exactly. After his daughter? Is named after...
Are you making that up or are you asking?
Barry Gordy's daughter.
Right, named
daughter.
After Barry Gordy's
Some
daughter.
Tammy right. or whatever her name was.
And so that's why I took it from, because it was created because they was given another side of what Motown was. You know what I mean? So... That's Jamla. And I want to sit to my left or right because we're new in the camera. Over here, we have my man Add 2 from Chicago, represents Chicago.
Add 2.
Add 2.
Is that ADD number 2?
ADD-2.
ADD-2, all right.
Add 2.
And over here, we have Rhapsody from North Carolina.
Get close to the microphone, Rhapsody.
What's up, Peter?
Hey, how are you, Rhapsody?
I'm good, I'm good.
God, I've known you for a long time now.
Very long.
It's weird.
Oh, is that... That southern accent's gonna throw me off.
Turn you on.
Yeah.
You're a little turned on now. Yeah. I hear what you're saying.
Like my twang.
Oh.
Oh, God. Oh, Nelly. Oh, Nelly now.
London and southern. That just throws me off.
So, first of all. No.
Okay.
That is his artist. Don't worry.
Is that his wife?
It's his wife. That's why he held up his ring. That means it's his wife. That's right. Hip hop secrets you do not know. So, here's what we're gonna do. By the time this hits the computers and iTunes stream, the album will be out. The Jamla album will be out. What is the name of the compilation, Ninth Wonder?
Name of the compilation is Jamla's the Squad.
Jamla's the Squad is the name of the compilation.
Hosted by Static Selector.
So it's a mixtape compilation.
Right.
Why isn't he called? If you're gonna call a white guy to host, why is it gonna be Static Selector and not me?
I don't know, man. You are a DJ, aren't you?
Damn, I feel some type of way. Hey, listen. I'm sure you've known Static Selecta at least as long as you've known me. Oh, no. Definitely not.
Definitely not.
It's not like, yeah. I mean, oh, well, he was probably featured on an early Little Brother album. No, I was.
Wasn't right. You're right.
It was me that was featured on the Little Brother album. Hmm. Right. I got a check from Atlantic Records for $500 for that feature.
Did you?
I did. Which I believe is more that. Than you guys made on that album
I
combined.
We were missing $500.
Exactly.
I knew it, man. Damn, Atlantic.
So tell us who's featured on this real quick. Who else is featured on this? And who is Jamla in total?
In total?
Yes.
Jamla is a Rhapsody, Add 2, a GQ from Oakland, Big Remo from my hometown, Winston-Salem, mm-hmm. TP from my hometown, Winston-Salem, Actual Proof, a two-man team, Enigma and Sundown from Raleigh, which you play some of the music for. Mm-hmm. Heather Victoria, the songstress Heather Victoria, and from Wilson, North Carolina, and Hollow, which is originally from New York City, who lives in North Carolina now.
It's a lot of North Khaki Lackey.
Right. And the label manager is Sean Boog of the Away Team.
Boog's from the Away Team,
right?
Wow.
Exactly. And I have a production team called the Soul Council. And that's myself, E. Jones, Eric G., Cash, Amp.
Oh, so now Prices, that you're a big Hollywood producer, they ghost produce and you take the credit. I see. No, I've seen
yeah, that's it. Yeah,
I've seen
yeah,
this before.
You're right on. Yeah.
Yeah, I know how it works. Right now, on. Fonte is not a part of this.
No.
He's featured.
Right. He's featured on the compilation. So is Big Pooh, also featured on the compilation.
Not together, though.
No.
Are they still no bueno?
You got to ask them. I, I'm good with everybody.
So that means, see how I got my answer question?
No, I just don't, you know.
You don't speak on it.
His eyes said it all.
Yeah. It's called.
I didn't even know there was an issue, and I already saw it.
It's called media training.
It's really good. Yeah. Also, currently these days, you are a Harvard professor.
Yes, sir.
Never got an invite up to the class.
And Duke University, too. I believe I did.
He wouldn't go to Duke.
Duke I wouldn't go to. If I went there, you know what I would do?
What'd you do?
I would take a shit in the middle of the room.
Really?
You'd bring a guest down, and they would be like, oh, my God, there's a man shitting.
I don't want to tell what I do at the University of Maryland, but it doesn't matter because they're not in the Big Ten.
No, we're not in the ACC anyway. We will be in the Big Ten.
It's pointless with the ugly.
We're about to play our last game against each other soon.
Yes, we don't care.
You didn't go to Duke.
I'm an employee of Duke University as well.
Do you have more allegiance to Duke than Harvard?
I do.
Because it's hometown?
Yeah. And it's my favorite basketball team and have a relationship with the basketball team.
They're so white and nerdy. How can you root for
them? That's why he got static select.
Actually, it's not. Duke is 45% minority.
That is a lie.
No, it's not. It's true.
Italians, it's true. Couple Jews. Yeah. You are a bald or bold, I don't know which it is, face liar.
It's truth, man. It's 45% minority.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Well, can they allow some of those people to go to the basketball games? Because I swear I only saw white people in the crowd.
No, that's not necessarily true. If you want to see a lot of white people in the crowd, look at the University of North Carolina's crowd.
Oh, see, it's classic.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like
North Carolina and Duke people.
I've done my research.
You're saying that they have, you're saying Duke has a higher minority percentage than North Carolina?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
North Carolina.
University of North Carolina. See, Seif didn't, how should I say this? Seif didn't go to college.
I went to college.
Junior's college. For a second.
A junior college? Community college.
Even
it's not
worse.
Junior college.
That's less than junior college. Now, granted, Seif did...
A year and a half, man.
Now, listen, Seif passed up a full ride to NYU.
Wow, why'd you do that, Seif?
Seif, what'd you get on your SAT again?
1540
on his SAT.
Not fucked up.
Seif is a nerd.
He went to a year and a half, and yet he went to a year and a half
nerd,
of community college.
I am.
That's right.
I am. And I went to Nassau Community College for studio engineering.
Well, it paid off. Look at that. Look at you now.
15 what now?
1540.
1540.
Wow. I didn't know. I should have went to NYU.
Ask around your Duke classes. See how many. You won't see many 1540s. You'll see a couple. Not a whole lot.
It's a trick, though.
SATs
is easy, man. You just got to know the trick. You got to know the pattern.
He's trying to downplay his nerdiness.
I know. He's trying to downplay it.
You got to know, man. 5% 5%ers will teach you how to pass an SAT, man.
This is true.
All trick knowledge.
That's what you learned.
This is very true.
Yeah.
Okay, Zulu Nation. Now, you are an active member in the Zulu Nation.
I am.
Oh, you're real Zulu Nation.
He's real. I am. Official tissue.
Official tissue.
Ours, this sounds so stupid. It's embarrassing even.
Can you tell me what they're saying in that record?
What
Zulu.
Gestapo.
Gestapo.
Yes.
It is Gestapo.
Gestapo.
I thought it was that, and then I was like, wait, that's some weird Nazi thing.
Gestapo.
You mean Zulu.
Gestapo. Zulu.
That's what it is?
Gestapo. Yes.
But in my head, I was. I don't know what it was in my. As a child, you know what it was in my head?
The Flash Party.
In my head, it was Scooby Doo, that style is old. That's what it was in my head growing up.
I always thought it was Zulu Gazpacho, like some kind of like Italian dish.
They were talking about a delicious
food. You were closer to him.
Yeah. It's really Gestapo? Why do they say that?
That's their teacher in Maryland, man.
We didn't know. Okay, real quick, relationship between 5%er nation and Zulu nation.
Not much.
Can Zulus be 5%ers?
Zulu can be anything. You can be Jewish and be a universal.
So what does Zulu Nation really mean?
Universal Zulu Nation is peace, unity, having fun. It was started by African men about 1973.
That part I know. Okay.
You all know that part. Okay.
We
created out of the Black Spades in the Bronx, New York, changing all the Black Spades gang members into hip hoppers.
My mom used to whip your girl's asses.
Really? When she was a Savage
Black
Skull?
Spades? Oh, yeah.
What was her position?
Warlord of the Savage
Skulls.
Seif's
mother was Warlord of the Savage Skulls.
Wow.
Just saying, they got it in.
Just back in the day, it wasn't peace. It wasn't peace.
It wasn't peace at all, right.
No, but then Africa Bambaataa was sick of that. Changed it to Zulu Nation.
So it basically took a gang and made it hip-hop.
At the time, it wasn't MCs at the time. It was just DJs and graph writers and B-boys and B-girls. And the majority of the B-boys and B-girls was Latino.
Really?
Yes.
So that's how it started. And then what does it mean now? I know you guys are having, in the midst of a bit of a resurgence,
right?
Things have been getting reorganized sort of and refocused.
Right. Well, just trying to gain some type of cultural foundation to you know, hip hop doesn't have really an organization outside of corporate that is as a cultural foundation to
what
it.
What about KRS-One, you know, the temple of hip hop?
Yo, bro. This dude. You know
what I mean? Go down there. What's going on down there later on today? I forget. Okay.
So that's what we're doing. And you know, there's been several resurgences in Zulu. The first one was when, you know, Q-Tip, A Tribe, and CarQuest, and Brand Nubian, and everybody.
So early 90s. Early about 20 90s. Years in it. Huh?
Right. And which got us into it. You know what I mean? Right. We heard it the first time on Planet Rock, if you didn't live here. And then we heard it again through them. And so now it's happening again, but now it's through myself.
Zulu Nation.
Through myself, Sean Price, Be Real from Cypress Hill.
Really?
Rocker from Dilated Peoples, yeah.
What?
And Rhapsody, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You drafted her in.
I'm in there.
Right.
Well, did they make you do anything to get in this group?
I mean, you know, there's a process for us. We can't really talk about that process.
But there is a process.
There's a process.
Really?
Yes.
Do you have a good collection of classic 90s Africa medallions?
I do not.
Because Bambaataa used to wear like 70 at once.
He still wears them. Like, he still wears them.
He's around.
Yeah, I actually have a Zulu medallion that was passed down from like 1981.
Wow, really?
King to King, yeah.
Wow. What's your relationship like with Bambaataa?
It's not that a big of a relationship. I have a more relationship with King Mark Love from the West Coast. Ahmad Henderson that lives here in the Bronx, Queen Unique that lives here in the Bronx, Lord Yoda that lives in the Bronx. So I have more relationship with them than I actually do with Africa.
But you've met Bambaataa.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Several times.
Yes.
What's he like?
Quiet, man. You know, he doesn't talk much. I guess he doesn't need to talk much. You know what I mean? Like, he's just very reserved and very quiet and kind of sits back and watches everything. You know what I mean?
That guy's important. If I was African Bambaataa, I wouldn't say anything. Just sit there as a godfather of this whole culture. Just hold exactly right.
Exactly.
Just put my arms on. All right, so I know a bit of your story, but for the people who don't, where does the Ninth Wonder hip hop journey begin?
It starts in Durham, North Carolina, North Carolina Central, with it starts at NC State, where I made my first beat in 1998. And then I went to Central back to Central. My grades were good. And I met Fonte. He was holding my Source magazine, let him hold. And we shared a common interest in music. And it just went from there. And he was playing football at the time. And he
Monte Coleman?
Yeah, he played football.
Played football.
Fullback.
Wow, really?
Yeah, man.
I didn't know that.
And like, he doesn't even like sports now, which is crazy.
I know. I've never, you and I.
Hates sports, man.
Yeah, like me and Pooh would talk sports, and but you and he would never say a word.
Yeah, like if I say Rajon Rondo, he would like, yeah, that's the guy who played for. What do you play for?
So you know who Rajon Rondo is?
The Celtics.
All right. You're not a sports dude, man. Okay,
that was pretty good.
I never heard his first name before, and you were talking about football, so I'm like, oh, this might.
Yeah, you know,
I'll try it.
Totally unrelated, but related. I was watching this interview I did with Action Bronson. I'm editing for a project. And at one point, he's telling a story about when he broke his leg. And he goes, you know how he uses like crazy descriptors all the time? And he's talking about the doctors and how he almost punched one of the doctors in the face when they were resetting his leg. And he's like, the one doctor, he looked like Rajon Rondo in the face. Yeah. He's so crazy. And he really used that in regular conversation. And then he's like, I grabbed him by the throat. I spit in the other doctor's face. I'm like, we can't use this in the interview anymore. This is crazy town. Well, they were trying to fix his leg. It really hurt. He'd broken his fibula. Anyways, so he played football at the time.
Right.
And you guys connect over some hip-hop-ish.
Right.
And just because I love hip-hop.
Always liked music before that?
Always.
But you just made a beat when you got to college?
Well, I was in the band. And see, I was a band geek, dude. Oh, you know what I'm saying? In sixth grade, seventh grade, all the way up to 10th, 11th grade.
What instruments?
I play seven. All forms of clarinet, like two-form saxophone, French horn, trombone, percussion.
Jeez.
You know what the difference between... No, you know what a trombone player and a dog have in common?
Tell me.
They're both not on their way to a gig.
I can't do it. I can't do it, man.
Oh, that's a good line. Who's that's a band joke?
Ooh, yeah, where you get that from, man?
I don't know. It's like
where you get that band
like
joke
old
from?
Frank Sinatra style joke. Like,
yeah,
one of those
awesome
dudes. Sorry.
So it's all good. That's where I get it from, man. You know, just the music history. But then simultaneously, I met Big Pooh, you know, in the calf, one day just talking, and you know, he said, man, I need a ride up the hill, because you know, you got to go up the hill to our dorm. He said, I need a ride up the hill, man. And just went from there, and that started like 98, but then it didn't go on until 2001 that we became Little Brother.
And then it popped off pretty quick, right?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the new artists, Kendrick, Macklemore, Mac Miller, everybody credits us for being
Drake credits us for being the one
that popped up from the internet, because that was kind of unheard of before. You know what I mean? Some people would say Slum Village, but Slum Village was right before that. They were like in the hip hop site, Sandbox, Automatic days, as opposed.
Great reference point. Yeah, you're right. Exactly right.
You know what I mean? But we were the OK Player. We were the first message board.
You guys were the babies of OK Player.
Right.
Tay Gravy was ringing off on them message boards.
Right.
Exactly. We would all have like big chat.
Back and forth.
Back and forth, right, on these message boards. Yeah.
And so that's
how
we
kind of
popped off.
How did you pop off from the internet, though?
Just, you know, first we were against it. We were against putting music on the internet because we didn't know what to expect until we put two songs up from the internet, and then it got like.
Which songs you put up first?
Speed and Whatever You Say, and from the listening. And
How'd you even upload it?
Right? Yeah, like, what do you mean? Was it an MP3?
It was uploaded by a guy by the name of Brainchild, mm-hmm. DJ Brainchild.
I remember him.
And he had a site called thejohn.com, mm-hmm. and he linked that site to an OK Player post, and he said, it said, Little Brother, group from North Carolina, kind of sound like Slum Village, check him out, tell me what you think. So that was that night, and the next morning, it had like 300 replies. Oh, this is great, Bob. And it just started from there. You know what I mean? So
a lot of fucking nerds were on the internet at that time.
Man, so I don't, you know, but also at the same time, our music got to Questlove. And if you know anything about Questlove, he goes from person to person, like, you got to listen to this, you got to listen to this, you got to listen to this.
That's what he does.
So I started getting these phantom calls from Evil D and Mr. Walt and DJ Spinner and Groove Attack in Germany and Music Soul Child. And I'm like, where y'all coming
all
from?
All from Questlove becoming a fan, because
yeah,
he's a nerd.
Just passing music from hand to hand like that. So with that and the internet, it just kind of started to spread. You know what I mean?
Now, the Little Brother part of this equation is, of course, that you guys ended up signing with Benny B.
At ABB Records.
Mm-hmm. You know Benny B?
Yes.
They dropped the album. Whatever You Say was amazing. I remember getting a copy of it from Kev, who I guess y'all do something in Philly? Were y'all do anything with Touch Jazz? I'm trying to remember how we first connected with you guys.
I don't know. It had to be... It had to be through the record they did with Kev Brown. I can't really
remember. Oh, because Kev did Always for ABB also.
And I remixed
and
Always.
And you remixed Always too. So anyways, it came together. And then you guys started, things started ringing off a little bit.
Right, right. We started to have major, you know, the album was done March of 2002. It wasn't released until February of 2003.
And at what point do we know, or do you believe, and am I even right in saying that Young Guru was a huge catalyst for your career?
Well, Young Guru was a fan of ours, because he bought our record in Fat Beats. You know, this is at the time.
Sight, were you still there?
No. Mm-hmm. What, 98?
No, 2003.
Oh, no.
This is at the time where we're kind of like, you know, just living in a bubble. We still are living in a bubble in North Carolina, not really knowing what's going on outside of. And so he bought the record in early 2003, and he would just play it in the studio. He played it for Jess. He played it for Kanye. He just played anybody that was in Rockefeller, you know, in Baseline Studios at the time. And me not knowing he was listening to us for that long, in September of 2003, you know, we had a mutual friend by T. Smith, by the name of T. Smith. And mm-hmm. T. Smith was one of the film guys for Fade to Black. And, you know, T. Smith just called me one day. He's like, look, man, like, somebody wants to talk to you. I'm like, ooh, you say Young Guru. I was like, wow. You know what I mean? And you kind of living in this world. We're coming out of the raucous generation. So you're kind of living in this world that commercial guys or your mainstream dudes don't really listen to underground dudes, right?
100% that's how it felt.
Right. And so, and that's just, but the whole Black Album experience just broke that whole mantra for me. And so then he reached out and he said, man, I'm a big fan of yours. I'm a big fan of the group. I want you to come up to play beats for Jay-Z. And that's how it kind of started from there.
So let's jump to there real quick.
Okay, let's.
How does that happen? Then you say, all right, I'm going to get on a plane and I'm going to come play beats for Jay-Z?
Yeah, we come to New York and in New York, and I just play Beats for Jay.
Where at?
Baseline Studios.
Baseline.
September 20th, 2003.
And how many beats did you play, Jay-Z?
I'll never forget that tape, bro. I was a history major. I played 29 beats.
29.
But I had like 150 with me.
Ready.
I thought that I was like, man, this is not, you know, I'm not going to blow this particular opportunity.
How far into those 29 was Threat?
Threat was not on that CD.
Threat wasn't on the CD?
No.
So was there anything on the CD that he wanted?
He wanted the beat for Loving It.
Really?
Yep.
It eventually became a Little Brother.
Which eventually was a Little Brother song. Yeah.
Yeah, it was eventually the first single from the album,
first
right?
single from the album, right.
And actually didn't end up doing what was really hoped it would do.
Right.
Ironically enough. And
it did enough for us.
Yeah, I mean, it did nice, but right. It wasn't like the set off to insanity.
Right.
And it's interesting that Jay wanted that too.
Jay wanted that beat, right.
So how did it end up being Threat?
Because he took the CD home with him that night. He said, man, can I ride home to the CD? I'm like, yeah, it's no problem. So we...
No!
Exactly,
fuck you,
right?
Ho. You walk with nothing.
So,
I don't trust you.
That was that Saturday. That Sunday, I did Future Flavors with Marley Marl. And the Monday, came back. And he said, well, I got this song, man. I listened to some more beats. He said, man, you got a lot of damn beats. He said, well, I got this song called Threat, and I want you to use this sample. So he gave me a CD, pulled it off the speaker, and he gave me the R. Kelly sample, A Woman's Threat. And he said, well, man, see if you can do with this. I'll be back in 25 minutes. But my laptop wasn't acting right at the time because I had Fruity Loops on it, right? So I had to hit my man Brainchild to bring me...
you make reggaeton?
No, I do not.
Was that common for reggaeton?
Yeah. That's the MPC of reggaeton.
So I hit my man Brainchild. He brought me an updated version of the program, and he brought it down, and then I did the beat. By the time he came back, I let him hear it. He loved it. We put it on the Pro Tools board, and then we went for it.
How easy was Threat for you?
It's pretty easy. I live by a motto, chance favors the well-prepared.
Say it again?
Chance favors the well-prepared.
Oh, that is a great motto to have.
So,
do you remember the songs, Dave?
I let it sing you a song, I let it hum to you. The other one sing along, now it's a duet, a duet. When you check out the technique from the two techs,
and I don't need to... It's a bad site too. I didn't even realize.
Spotify?
I just went to Google.
Come on.
Sorry. I didn't even realize that was that sample. I love that R. Kelly song.
Yeah, it's a classic.
So it just went from there. I just put myself back in my room at home, just making beats all the time. That's the chance favors the well prepared, because I'm well prepared for any chance I got to play beats for anybody or make beats for anybody.
Well, do you remember the first check you got for the Black Album work? How about that?
Yeah, I do. It was my advance check.
Oh, you got an advance check first?
Yeah.
So if that's how it works?
Yeah.
Hold on. Sorry, don't laugh at me, all right? As a producer,
yes.
The advance...
Back then, not
check,
now. Now is bullshit.
But back then, yeah. You get an advance
the
check.
The first half.
The first half of your total beat payment.
Yeah.
How much you paid for that beat? Tell us.
I can't do it.
It was a long time ago.
You told us September 20th.
You know, we know you remember.
And that's all you need to know,
really. Numbers.
You know what I mean? I know numbers, and I know, you know,
okay,
I know numbers
this?
Don't lie, and I know some numbers I keep to myself.
Was it more than 10 grand?
Some numbers I keep to myself.
Nah.
Maybe it wasn't more than 10 grand.
Maybe it was.
He was too new.
You think that Jay was like, let me just get the, come on, he's not saying no to this one. Give him 5 grand.
Yeah. The money's at the point. The opportunity is going to change
your
life.
I'll tell you what. The check that he then got for Destiny's Child Girl was then a whole level up from the first check. Is that accurate to say?
That is accurate to say, yeah.
That is accurate.
I had 3 on that album.
The Destiny's Child album?
Yes. The Destiny's Fulfilled album.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's
pretty one of the few, yeah, I can say this wrong. I'm one of the few producers that work with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Hello.
It's only like 2 or 3 of us. Timbaland being one of them. I'm being another one.
He's Green.
Green.
Dream's a good one.
And...
Pharrell?
You said Dream?
Dream.
Okay.
Pharrell?
What did you say?
I thought you said Green. Green Lantern.
Not Green. Dream.
And then you were trying to think of a Green Lantern and Beyonce song and it just didn't make any sense.
I was sitting up like, what?
Pharrell did.
Pharrell.
Pharrell. Yep.
Pharrell did Work It Out.
Yep.
Which I fucking love.
Yeah.
I love that song.
So.
Pookie.
Who's Pookie? You making him up?
Yeah.
You just made him up.
I made him up.
I figured you just made that guy up. He doesn't even exist. So, did you keep any sort of relationship with Jay?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anytime we, you know, Jay is not the, it's only a few people have Jay-Z's phone number, right? When he keeps the same phone number, right? But yeah, I just saw him recently. He came to Greensboro on Magna Carta too, and you know, talk like we always talk.
And shit's cool.
Yeah. What does he call you?
Knife.
Everyone calls him Knife.
Sometimes he has other names for people.
Really? What does he call you?
Fuckface.
That I believe.
Idiot.
I've seen him. Last time I saw you guys in the same room, he was calling you an idiot.
Last time he was very upset with me. Last time you saw me together.
Yes, he was. She treated you like a moron.
No, he said, what was it? What did he say? It was inappropriate.
Yeah, we hosted.
Inappropriate. No, that was not the word.
He was being paranoid, though. He was wrong.
No, he apologized.
He did?
Yeah, he apologized. But it was.
It wasn't worthy of an apology. He wasn't that mad, was he? You made you feel bad?
Yeah, it seemed like it.
Right, you did feel bad.
I feel bad, yeah. But I knew I was in the right.
Speaking of which, do you think we can get Rihanna for one Epstein now?
I'm gonna try.
Why not?
I'm gonna try.
What would you, be honest?
We're gonna go into this. You have guests.
I wanna get right back.
You have company.
It's one Epstein.
Come on, man.
Did you put Rihanna first on your UCB improv show?
Beto, come on, man. We got Lim years, 12 years. Can we not talk about Rihanna?
She just Instagrammed him last week, Ninth. This is big news.
We just made up. You know what I'm saying?
This is really big news,
exactly,
okay?
No,
they're finally...
No offense to Riri and all. But
they're, yeah. Do you ever talk to Beyonce?
When I see her, yeah.
That's it. Y'all don't like sitting on the phone. Y'all don't phone. No phone bones.
She's, you know, I can honestly say of all of the megastars that I know, all the people in the game that I know, those are the two nicest.
Really?
That I've ever, yeah.
Who else, for someone like Cypher, who may not be aware, because he's too mainstream to know all these underground things, who else have you worked with over the years?
Erykah Badu. I did an album with David Banner.
That was dope.
Ludacris. I won a Grammy with Mary J. Blige. So yeah.
What record for Mary J. Blige?
A Good Woman Down. It was on the album The Breakthrough.
Did you go to the Grammys?
I did not. She shouted me out, though.
She did?
Yeah.
What'd she call you?
Ninth Wonder.
That makes sense. Did you, where's the Grammy in your house?
It's in my studio on the wall.
God, that's good.
It's great. Fantastic.
Have you ever spent quality time with your woman while just holding that up in the air? Put it above your bed?
What's wrong with this dude, bro? What's wrong with it?
I'm just saying. That's what I would
What's
do.
Wrong with it? It's on the wall, man. It's on the wall.
They're supposedly pro wrestlers who they used to have sex in the championship belt. And they get when they win the title.
You can't really wear your Grammy, though.
No.
How do you wear your Grammy?
You don't. It'd actually be totally ineffective.
The Grammy's actually an awkward award. It's like all boxy. And
yeah, it's weird in the first place. That's a good point. You make a lot of sense there. So what is your course about at Harvard? What are you teaching these kids?
It's a course called
These
All
the Truth
Greeks.
To the Young White Youth.
When white, yeah, this is, the white youth.
How white is it?
I think about 70% of the class is white.
All right, and since I spoke on you and you said it, the name of the course one more time?
These Are the Breaks.
So it's teaching them the origins of hip-hop.
Right, pretty much. Just the history of it and where it comes from and, you know, how, you know, it's multi-levels in that class. You know, the conversation can start one way, but it just takes off. Because you're talking about at Harvard, you're not talking about it, but just a bunch of smart kids. You're talking about critical thinkers. You know what I mean?
So they have a lot of questions.
A lot of questions and have a lot of, they know how to debate with opinion and back their with facts up. They know how to really support their opinions at Harvard. It's not like I just got an opinion and that's it. They just know how to really articulate their opinion.
How big is the class?
70 students.
That big, huh?
Uh-huh.
How knowledgeable are the kids?
Very knowledgeable.
Really? Impressive.
Very.
In
hip-hop. Because the thing about it is, if they don't know, they're going to go home and find out. By the time they come back to the next class, they're going to know.
Really? It's like that.
It's like that.
How many?
And they want to be there. It's not like kids like, oh, we got to go to class.
No.
Do people fight to get in your class?
No, yeah.
It's a fight to get in there.
Yeah.
And how many days a week is it?
It's one day a week.
What day?
It's Wednesdays.
You fly up?
Yeah, I fly up.
You don't stay up there?
No.
Never?
No. Well, I'll stay the night before and then do class and then leave.
Oh, got it. You get up Tuesday night, get your ish together, and then...
Exactly.
And you do it the whole year round?
Uh-uh, just a semester.
Just one semester.
Mm-hmm.
Which fall?
Spring semester. But the thing about it was, I went to Harvard on a fellowship.
Right.
It was the which is now named the Nasir Jones Fellowship.
Wow.
This is the fellowship that
that's Nas's real name.
Thank you, Seth.
Thank you.
Selling the people.
If you're a Juan Epstein listener and you don't know who Nasir Jones is, you're no longer a Juan Epstein listener. I kick you out of the podcast.
So that's the fellowship that I won. Okay. And, you know, it was a year-long fellowship that I had to do research, and I had to present a colloquium in front of Henry Louis Gates, Jr. And on top of that, I had to teach a class. So it was kind of a twofold experience at Harvard.
Did you ever teach before that?
Yeah, currently at Duke.
At Duke first?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I was teaching at North Carolina Central first, then at Duke. So this is my fourth year of Duke class? Yeah. At Duke, it was sampling soul at first, just talking about the black diaspora music, and now it's just hip-hop history.
At Duke also?
Yes.
And would you teach that year-round?
No, it's a semester only.
Fall?
Spring.
Spring. Both spring at the same time?
Yeah.
And what about North Carolina Central? Done?
Yeah, I'm done with North Carolina Central right now.
So you ditched all the black people and just went off to the white schools?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did.
See, this is classic. This is
happening in hip-hop. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, that's good. You got to teach.
Like,
you got to teach.
All the way there.
You know what I mean? Hip-hop.
The black people.
What was the sample the soul? What was that?
Sampling soul at first, and then it changed over to hip-hop.
What was that course? How do you explain that?
Like I said, it talked about black diaspora of music from like the 1920s coming all the way up. Talked about it, social media, mass, any type of media.
Music getting stolen or taken away?
No, just the evolution of it. Like how it affects society.
So can you just give us an example, like, of what your syllabus sort of looks like? Like, where do you start for the class now? For example, at either of them, because they're pretty similar now, right?
Right.
Like, where do you start? First day, everyone walks in.
We start at the Immigration Act of 1924, and then we jump from 1924 to 1965, which changed the whole demographic of the Bronx in 1965.
What's the Immigration Act?
Immigration Act at first in 1924, it put a limit on U.S. immigrants that can come in
Ellis
the United
Island
States.
Got shut, like, they like, all right, that's enough.
You can only take a certain amount from this country, a certain amount from this country. But LBJ changed it in 1965, and Bronx changed what was majority white to...
What changed?
The Bronx.
Okay.
Changed to which
you
was
said Bronx.
Bronx.
No, he said the Bronx earlier.
I thought you heard just said Bronx. You got to put the in the Bronx.
He takes the very seriously.
Okay. Only borough with a the.
So okay. Very proud of it. He's very respect the. Okay. Yo, get a shirt that says
respect the something.
That's a fucking good shirt.
It changed the demographic from a white majority to Latinos and West Indians.
You're welcome.
Over a course of 3 or 4 years, it just changed dramatically.
Because now as many people could come in as whatever.
Right,
so it was a free-for-all in the Bronx.
Right, exactly.
So the white people got terrified.
Right, pretty much, if you want to say that. And also the construction of the...
That's some West Side Story shit right there.
Exactly. We used that movie, as a matter of fact. And also the construction of the Cross Bronx Expressway just ripped straight through the Bronx.
That was like one of the first things I ever learned about hip-hop. I used to recite that fact all the time.
Right.
I was like, then they built the Cross Bronx Expressway, and that's when everything changed.
You just, that it's broken down to like Cross Bronx. Why?
Right.
Started taking people out of the Bronx.
Yeah, started taking people out of the Bronx, and just you're digging a highway through the Bronx, and you got straight rats living in people's houses. Like, it just changed the whole demographic of the Bronx.
Of the building of the highway.
Yeah, the building of the highway.
That's what they said.
It's crazy. Right.
Said it made the Bronx nasty.
Yeah.
Wait, it made it worse or better?
Worse.
Why worse?
There's demolition and pollution.
Building the highway. Oh, fucked up the Bronx.
Yeah. And it was built because, you know, he wanted to give the white middle class and white upper middle class a highway to get to from the suburbs to the beach.
Who was that again? Was it LaGuardia? Who's the person?
Robert
Morris, right.
This is fucking fascinating.
So. He's not stupid.
No, I don't. I see. So the Cross Bronx fucked up. And mind you, the Cross Bronx is still fucked up.
Yeah. Still sucks, right. By the way.
Right. It doesn't have
Once
any...
Once you start getting a Jerome Ave and George Washington Bridge, you're just in tractor trailer right. hell.
Always.
So always. Four in the morning.
It is.
Mess.
Four in the morning.
I hate it. Cross Bronx sucks.
Okay, so go ahead.
So is that literally just... Is that the first class you start on the very early pre the music stuff?
Right.
By the second class, you're already moving into music?
Now we're moving into the music, and we're talking about how Kool Herc came from
Jamaica.
From Trinidad, Jamaica. From seeing a James Brown concert when he was 12, 13 years old.
In Jamaica?
You interviewed him for this? Or
no.
You, but you got...
And so...
Herc would do the class.
Herc would
You just got to give him about $3,500.
Right, exactly.
And lunch. And if you provide lunch and $3,500, you can get Kool Herc. That's true of most of the greats of our wonderful culture.
So
for a quick check and a snack.
They'll be there. But that's what happened. Herc came to the Bronx, and it, you know, started doing the soundboard parties and the sound parties that were sound machine parties that was done in Jamaica, and he would do those in the Bronx. And
now,
it just changed the course of everything because he was playing, you know,
what was
funk
going on
records
before
and break
that?
Records.
Were they not having parties before that?
Not the parties that we do.
Can you find
as
out?
As far as DJing, taking two turntables and putting them together.
Can you just
thanks, Pete DJ Jones.
I want you to, that, wait, sorry, what was that?
Pete DJ Jones.
Who's Pete DJ Jones?
One of the early DJs.
You know who Pete DJ Jones is? Mm-hmm. You're a fucking disrespectful prick. Not knowing that. From the Bronx, you're spitting on
Pete
the
DJ
on the
Jones,
Bronx.
I don't know.
You might as well call it so, Bronx now.
I mean, at first they would have a turntable on one side of the room and the other side they would flash the flashlight to let us know the song was going off. So they finally got smart and put two turntables together.
Really?
This is what, yeah, man.
So what research, because I've done a lot of hip-hop research. I never got to that part. Where'd you get that stuff?
Zulu Nation, man.
Zulu Nation gave you some gems.
Why the flashlight? What? How long?
Listen, for the song starts to fade.
How long did it take them to realize, why don't we just put these things
to A, man, you know what I mean? You know, whether it be half a stance or whatever, man. So they would play records and play funk records, and there were certain parts of the record that they enjoyed other than other parts, and dancers would come up and like, look, can you just play that part over and over and over? And that's where the break started.
Now, can you find out who the first nerd was who figured out how to plug into the lamppost? That's the part I want
to
know.
Yeah,
because
go from the lamppost.
If you said, "Hey, Peter, you're a DJ," and I'd be like, "Yeah," and they'd be like, "You could set up a DJ setup." I'm like, "Sure. All right, cool. Can you figure out how to get electricity from the lamppost?"
Right.
I'm like, "You better go fuck yourself."
Yeah, but it was before that though. They didn't start plugging into the lamppost just because of the party. They were plugging in the lamppost for other shit.
Yeah.
Oh, because that was already being done.
That's not a hip-hop thing.
Like, that was a thing just to get electricity.
Right.
Period.
Like, if you were outside.
You want to do something outside. Yeah.
So the nerd who figured that out goes way back.
Before hip-hop.
Right.
In the 60s. Like,
yeah.
You don't know where that happened.
Right. Yeah.
I still was always like, damn.
Because there was still, like, there was probably still, like, a band performing, and they needed electricity, like, 10 years before hip-hop.
Who was that guy?
I don't
know.
Who
was willing to take the
risk
of pulling the wires out and fucking soldering something?
We're thinking he's a hip-hopper, but he's not.
I'm picturing it was like a guy spinning on his head, and then he jumped up and was like, and then opened the whole thing and was like, toot, quick soldering.
MacGyver.
I know, like the MacGyver of hip-hop, the young MacGyver.
Grandfather, great-great-grandfather.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that sounds like an awesome course to teach. You must feel super honored and cool to teach that course.
Yeah, it's fine, man. Fine.
You ever bang out any of your students? I'm just kidding. I just want to say something. I just wanted to throw them off and say it whatever way I could.
Kevin Hart, no, no.
No.
What do you like? So are you a professor officially now? Like, what are you?
I'm called a professor. I'm called a professor by other professors.
How weird is that?
It's not weird at all.
It's not weird?
Yeah. When I first met Michael Eric Dyson, he said professor. I said professor.
And shut up that it wasn't weird. That's weird. Look at your face right now. I could tell
it
was weird.
You look, man, like, you know, like my mama told me, act like you've been there before.
That's still crazy. So what do kids call you, professor?
Sometimes. They say knife, Professor Knife. Pen.
Please, has anyone ever said Professor Wonder?
Never.
Because if so, would you disrespect
that
them?
That would be not cool, though.
I love when people outside of hip-hop call people by their fake names, by the last part of their fake name.
Right.
Mr. Wonder.
Master Killer. Mr. Sounds. Killer.
No, people say Mr. Sounds.
All the time. I mean, I know, I think they're joking, but...
Mr. Sounds.
So what else? Ninth Wonder.
Yes, sir.
We have a Jamla album out right now. First of all, Rhapsody, how did you get to meet Ninth Wonder?
I met Ninth while I was in college at NC State. We had a hip-hop organization, and you came through to listen to some music.
Yeah.
And what nerdy job were you doing with this hip-hop organization?
Man, I was writing poetry, man.
You were slapping. The fly flies high above the sky. That was you?
That was not, yeah. That
pretty
was
close. Me. You were snapping.
Yeah. Mm-mm. Yeah. But nah, I wrote and recorded my first two songs, and he heard something in that newness. He was like, you have a gift. So
This is early, so you were brand new.
Yeah, this is fall of 2005.
Do you look back and be like, damn, I sucked back then. What did you even hear?
And he tortures me. Like, he keeps the music. He'll be like, remember this? And I'll be like, chill. Like, why you got to do that? It is so bad. It's like,
no, from whence you came.
Bad. It's bad.
No, from whence you came.
He can always, just always remind you in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
But you've really come a long way. People are really starting to F with you.
Yeah, it feels good, man. I put the work in, so.
You rap. I wrote you a note on Twitter. And you, yeah, she's ready to raps. She, you didn't respond to my note.
See, this is what happened. I you saw disrespect. It.
I thought I was worried I was offensive.
And I replied on my phone. I said send, and I checked a couple of days. I was like, he didn't get it because he's not following me, so I can't DM him.
Oh, but you have my number. Don't you have my phone number?
I do not. Mm-hmm. I'm not as cool as Ninth.
You have my phone number? That's terrible. That's your own fault. Here, put in your code so I can get my phone number. That's crazy. And I wasn't following you?
You're not following me.
Do you know how many random just whores I'm following and I'm not following a friend? They're just chicks with boobs and they're Avi, and that's I'm following them.
Girl, you got some big boobs.
And I need to know what they're saying. What are they talking about in life every day? Rhapsody? Meh, I'm good. My comment that I said to her was, she put out a dope song called Betty Shabazz.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just Rhapsody? What's your...
Rhapsody.
That's it?
Yes.
So I said Betty Shabazz is dope. I said, but I was actually slightly disappointed because I thought it was going to be a record about Betty Shabazz.
It was.
Well, part of it was. It wasn't. I was waiting for like the biographical. Betty Shabazz record.
Life and Times of
Betty Shabazz.
Betty Shabazz's life is so unbelievably tragic and interesting.
Very much.
That I'm just fascinated by her, but still the song is super tight.
Yeah, with the kids today, I don't feel like
they're ready for a biographical
right.
Betty Shabazz song.
But I feel like if you name it that, they'll be like, who is this woman?
100%. And that's why it's effective.
So, right, right.
There are very few, listen, I don't think there were many people who shared my sentiment of, I really wanted this to be a biographical Betty Shabazz song.
By yourself on that.
What was it called?
It was called Betty Shabazz.
Oh,
what were you just listening to? You just tuned out.
I can't tell you. I'll tell you later. Sorry,
it's pretty weird.
I got an urgent message. I have to check something.
But you will tell me about it later?
Yeah, of course.
That's nice.
So what? Betty Shabazz what?
She put out a song called Betty Shabazz.
Betty Shabazz?
But it's not about Betty Shabazz. I mean, it references Betty Shabazz.
Right. It's about
you reference her quickly.
A strong black woman.
Yeah. And I was just saying to her, I was like, I wish it was about Betty Shabazz in detail. I want to hear everything. God, do you guys ever realize how depressing? I'm sure you do. I'm saying this to the wrong group of people. But do you realize how depressing the end of Betty Shabazz's life is?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, it is the worst.
Yeah.
In fact, it makes an already depressing movie in Malcolm X more depressing. Because now if I see it and the movie ends, I just sit there thinking like, fast forward, she's going to die at the hands of her crazed... Who's now also dead.
Yeah.
Who's now also dead.
Right.
So depressing.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite black leader from history? Ha ha! Interesting question for you, Ninth
Very
Wonder.
Interesting. I have several, man.
I know.
I
know you do.
I have several, man. Hannibal.
That's Burris? Right.
Hannibal of Carthage.
I don't know who that is.
Wow.
Wow.
Is he related to Hannibal Burris?
Hannibal even references him in his comedy.
He does?
Yes.
So tell us who he is.
Hannibal of Carthage, a Moor, a black Moor from Northern Africa, who overtook Rome and went through the Alps Mountains on elephants with his army.
All right, you don't make me feel bad. I don't know about one of the
really?
Moors.
No, come
Moor?
On, that's big. You don't know who Hannibal is?
Hannibal.
Rasan, you know who Hannibal is?
No.
See? He's black. His name's Rasan, and he doesn't know.
That's a shame. You really don't know that?
I don't know, man. I wasn't.
That's why they say
Can
Sicilians
we get some more
black.
People, man? I'm
That's why they say Sicilians are black.
No, I know
all
what
Africans.
Moors are. I know who Moors
yeah,
are.
But they
okay,
rode through,
I also like.
And they started fucking all the Italian chicks.
I know how it went.
Wow. I also like.
Wow. That was a lot of information.
Wow. Yes. Mansa Musa.
Okay.
What
about himself?
That one.
You fucking moron.
He was king in Africa. He was a great king in Africa. One of the first billionaires, as a matter of fact.
Anyone born after 1200?
You asked me, do you say history? Who are you talking to?
I know, Tom, we're going to get up here eventually.
One of my favorite people right now, man, and I know it's going to go into a whole nother conversation, which I know we don't have time for, is the Honorable Louis Farrakhan.
Ooh, that would be a fun conversation. I would enjoy that.
I have
do it.
Am I going to do it? Why not do it? Pick up. Oh, we just missed Jean Grey's call.
Yeah, we just missed
do
up
it.
Jean Grey's call.
Yeah. What? There's nothing else to do. So tell me about why you like. Oh, my impression. You mean?
Come on,
I can't
juice.
I won't do my impression.
Do it.
He'll be offended.
Do it.
He loves
don't sucking.
Don't do it.
The money hungry. It's a good Farrakhan impression. It's very 80s based. So why do you like Farrakhan so much?
I can't do it, bro.
Why is
No. Because out of all of the black leaders that we have, I think for the most part he's done a lot, you know, especially with the hip hop community, and especially with dealing with and the preservation of black men, and that's, you know, why I and to be that, to have that particular stance, you're gonna have a lot of people that don't like you. You know what I mean? And, you know, I think he's just unapologetic with some of the things that he says, and he's unapologetic about the stances that he takes. And I think in order to be an effective leader, you have to do that. And that's why I dig Louis Farrakhan.
No, Ebro and I have had some conversations about that because, you know, Ebro's half Jewish, half black. So, I mean, off air, we had a lot of conversations about it because growing up as a Jewish kid in the 80s, the impression that one had of Louis Farrakhan,
it was not a good one.
Not a good one.
Okay.
And he has some bad quotes and moments to support that. However, Ebro was explaining that it made a lot of sense to me that he was really the only person who was consistently there for the black man's cause, a cause which was not a particularly sexy one to be a part of during that time period.
Exactly.
And I fully respect that. That's why I don't hate Louis Farrakhan. Like, I mean, I don't. At all. That's why when I said the thing I said about him recently, we talked about Farrakhan in the air, we were able to mend it up rather quickly because when asked about it and when talking to someone from the Nation of Islam, I don't have anything to say that's like, I don't have the typical white or Jewish guy's opinion of Farrakhan at all. I thought the situation I was poking fun at was funny.
Okay.
I do stand by that. Kanye West needing someone to tell that he's not an anti-Semite. Like, it just was an ironic situation to me, right?
Well, I mean, even with that, I think that particular, the statement came from, it wasn't like I'm just going to get on air and just talk about Kanye. That was a minute or 2 minute vignette from a weekly broadcast he does every
Saturday.
His
Saturday thing. So, but here's the thing that I will say. Well, this is the question I always have for people who love Farrakhan, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do you not believe, or are you willing to reconcile that he may have played a very negative role in Malcolm X's final situation?
I think that's something that still, you know, a lot of people would debate that he did or he didn't. I don't look at it. I don't factor that in my particular.
Because you don't know exactly what happened.
Right. Anyway. And with Louis Farrakhan, you know what I mean? I don't, for me, you know, I just know as a kid, just like you when in the 80s, a lot of the voices I've heard on Public Enemy records was Farrakhan. And I didn't have a voice on records other than rappers. I mean, we would listen to rappers, but would we listen to black leaders and black lecturers and black orators? Would we do that? Nah, we wouldn't do that, but we would do that first with Farrakhan. He's like the first in hip hop.
Did you ever stock the shelves of a KB toy stores listening to Farrakhan on a Barbie radio?
Saif, did you?
Yes.
The Barbie radio.
Yes, I did.
That's real.
On a Saturday.
Sundays.
On Sunday, you'd
be on every Sunday on BLS.
And see, this is coming from, you know, him living up here. You know, that's how Farrakhan affected me living in the South. You know what I mean? Because in the South, it's just Jesus is everything. And to be listening to anybody outside of what
are you Christian?
Christianity, yes. What Christianity is teaching you. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm supposed to be doing that. You Muslims and, you know, you get into that whole thing. But even if you go from that standpoint, if you look at some of the black leaders that we had in Christianity, your Eddie Longs and, you know, cats like that, you know what I mean? You know, you get into all of that, but it's Farrakhan.
What's the Muslim situation in where you're from?
It's not a very large Muslim population.
In the 90s, was there?
Nah. You still have five percenters. You still have Orthodox Muslims. You still had that, but it's still, you know, in North Carolina, Jesus is the reason for the season, bro. I mean, this is what it is.
Jesus is the reason for the season. So here's the last thing I would say in closing about Farrakhan the piece of negative that I have. I feel like Farrakhan's crutch of often casting negative light or energy or, I don't know, you could say hatred at times, but it depends, towards Jews, I feel went a long way towards negatively affecting the black Jewish relationship, particularly in New York.
Right.
But in general. And so I grew up always hearing rappers, a lot of rappers with this tone of anti-Semitism. Now, don't get me wrong. They also dealt with shady Jews at points in their life, depending on what your label was, blah, blah, blah. Plenty of people fucked them over who were Jews. But that's only one small piece of the black Jewish relationship, which is much bigger. And Jews in America have always been the biggest purveyor of black arts. Now, that also means there were ripoff artists in there as well,
right.
But all the good people were Jews too. So I always felt like it was sort of like the Jewish man is not the white man. We're, in fact, it's a little bit of crabs in a bucket to always attack the Jew. And that's what everyone does. It's happened literally for thousands of years. Every group is attack the Jew. This has happened always. So that bums me out that, like, Farrakhan has done that a lot, because I'm like, the real people when it comes to holding the keys to oppression in America are not Jews. Are there Jews in powerful positions in the government? Yes. Is there a government? Do we have a government that makes decisions based on allegiances to Israel? Yes. However, is it Jews that are keeping the cycle of true oppression of black people alive in America? No.
Yes.
And I
Saif,
think,
no, you got
the because you had the, you had the two yeses.
And I think this turned into Face the Nation.
You hear what I'm saying though?
You know what I mean? Yeah, but I mean, I think the same thing that you're saying is a story that black men and black people have had for a very long time. Are we the number one purveyor of violence? No. Are we portrayed as the number one purveyor of violence? Yes. That's the same thing. So the thing that you're saying about a small population of Jews are overtaking the larger population, and the advantage point of it is the same thing that happened with black men and black people. We are judged by a small portion that you see. Does these particular reality shows make us look bad? Yes. Does a lot of, you know,
I just watched a movie the other day. You ever saw the, I think it's called The Education of Sonny Carson?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That movie is horrible.
Why, depressing?
Like, I always heard about it. And I watched, like, all those type of movies. But I watched that one, and I was just like,
Are you familiar with The Education of Sonny?
Mm-mm.
Education, it's relationship with hip-hop. Education of Sonny Carson is the sound bites that they use for Ghostface.
That's what I was going to say. It's all the part. That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's like, I was just like, the depiction of black people in that era, oh, my God. Because I was like.
70s?
Yeah, but, like, yeah. It was super coonery. Like, I was like, I know, like, black people from the 70s, like, that's not in my family, but, like, family friends that, you know, I was okay in the 80s when I was able to remember people. They didn't act like that. Like, it's not like they were like, oh, fucking, like, what's up, chump? You best not come around here, like.
Oh no, that's
fuck. That movie.
But it's basically saying the same thing. So I get your vantage point.
I just think we should be together, man. Jews and blacks, powerful together.
There's a lot of
progress can't be made if we're separate forever. You see what I'm saying?
This is true.
Q-Tip once said that.
Farrakhan says some good shit.
Yes, well, his quotables for records are fucking.
Take out the Jew part and listen to the other shit.
No, I agree. Then I was all bummed out. The Million Man March happened. Like everyone skipped school to go. And I was like, I can't really rock with Farrakhan. It's like a little weird because you don't like me that much.
People from your white high school went to...
My high school is very mixed. My high school is like 50-50.
How did we get here?
My high school is 50% white.
I don't know how we got here.
35% here, black and like 15% Hispanic, something like that. And a lot of people went to the Million Man March.
How did
a lot
we
of people
get here?
Did. Not a million, unfortunately. But a lot of people went. It makes sense that we went here. Let's be honest. You are one of the most thoughtful and... outspoken. I don't even know how outspoken you are about it publicly, but to me, we talk about smart subjects when I see you. We talk about serious stuff.
Heavy stuff.
How's Fonte doing?
Fantastic.
He's good?
Good.
Fonte, is he one of the most talented rap artists you've ever heard of or encountered?
He's one of the best, if not the best rapper in the last decade.
Fontaine?
Fonte.
You don't even know his name. That's the disrespect you just showed. I didn't know who did I didn't know who it was? Someone of something.
Hannibal.
I didn't know who Hannibal of Anchorage.
Carthage.
What was it?
Carthage.
Hannibal of Carthage was. Okay. You didn't. You thought Fonte was Fontaine.
I know it's Fonte. I just misspoke that one second.
Okay, good. So what is Fonte? I just sometimes think like, Fonte is responsible for Drake. I mean, he birthed Drake to me.
Yes.
The singer, rapper who's proficient at both.
Yes.
Now, here's the one thing, and I say this I would say to Drake's face, no disrespect.
We all
true.
Would, yes.
He's a significantly better singer, and he's a significantly better rapper as well. I mean, he's incredibly strong at both. Obviously, he didn't have a major trait that Drake has, and that is the trait, whatever that trait is that made Drake who he is, that intangible, I don't know if that's because Fonte had a family early on. What is it you think that made Fonte kind of become an underground legend?
Fonte is a better rapper and singer.
Yes.
And
his singing voice is like
so
amazing.
You're saying I'm oblivious to the story.
Uh-huh.
So you're saying Drake used to listen to Fonte and that's where he got his style from?
If you go online at several places, he will credit Fonte as being one of his favorite rappers and one of his major influences. Drake
Drake is rapping
and singing
whatever he's doing. No, I'm saying before that. And he's like listening to like a lot of Fonte or Little
listening
Brother.
To Little Brother.
And then
well, he was a kid then though. When they came out in 2003, how old was Drake? Like 15.
And starts putting that style.
Yeah, just naturally. A guy who's rapping.
He was in love with all of that. He was in love with Little Brother, with Slum Village. He wanted to be involved in that entire movement.
Yeah, that was just his main thing. I'm not saying he blatantly was like, I'm going to be Fonte.
Right.
But Fonte set out this example of like you can rap and then sing the hook on your own song and then start rapping again. So what is it that you think makes Fonte simply like something of legend and folklore more than the biggest artist in the game like you feel like he could have been? Still be.
Young Money. Young Money. YMCMB.
Why?
Are you recording this part?
I mean, everything is due to exposure. Everything is due to how much exposure you get to the masses. You know what I mean?
Oh, Young Money didn't stop Fonte. They just blew up Drake.
Right. That's
they
what
didn't.
I, mean.
I thought you were saying they.
No.
They came in and were like, "You better stop singing, rapping."
No. Young Money is you know created a platform, you know, for Drake. You know what I mean? To have that platform to get to a larger audience. You know what I mean? Because once you get to that particular platform of being mainstream, you know, you are with a bunch of people or being exposed to a bunch of people that don't matter what you sound like, is this you're the new, you know, Kendrick Lamar is a classic example. How many people out of the people that, you know, bought his album and his platinum really understand Kendrick Lamar? As we can say about maybe 200,000, 250,000. Anything like, as my big brother Maceo says from De La, anything out of 250,000 is collateral damage, pretty much. And so Drake was put on that platform to get that type of notoriety. You know what I mean? I don't believe people are, you know, the listening public or the mainstream public. I don't believe they don't want to hear good music. I don't think they don't want to hear somebody that can rhyme. They just have to be exposed to it. They're not going to dig as deep as an okay player. They're not going to dig as deep as Sandbox Automatic.
Well, why? But couldn't Fonte have gotten a look from, like, how did he not meet that person who...
I mean, who knows? I mean, everything has to do with timing, man.
Look
everything
what Drake
when it comes
had to do. Drake had to fucking go to Houston, sign with one guy, who then brought him the cash money to sign to another guy who signed to another guy.
And Fonte is not going to let anybody have that much control. You know that.
I do know that.
I mean, me go. Either. Yeah.
That's your answer right there.
You know what I mean?
You know what the song I thought was going to blow up for him?
Where?
Big time? The first single with from him and Nicolay on the first album.
Oh, of Foreign Exchange?
The first Foreign Exchange album. Right. The up-tempo singing one.
Right.
To me, that was just like a pop. I thought that could have been pop. I thought that could have skipped urban radio.
Yeah, he's definitely had those. I mean, the first Foreign Exchange album is definitely, you know, Just Hold On with Going Home on there like 10 times, pretty much.
What's Foreign Exchange again?
It's him and a producer named Nicolay.
From Europe?
Yeah.
And did he have like European rappers on there?
Nope, no. Just him.
Because I was trying to make this group called Foreign Exchange, like this group of New Yorkers and kids from London. And they're like, there already is a Foreign Exchange. Yeah. I was like, oh, okay, sorry.
What was the first one called?
Connected.
Oh, it's Connected.
Right.
That's right.
So, sorry, I know I'm ignorant. So why did Little Brother break up?
Just, you know, they're going different paths, man. You know what I mean? Like, we all had different aspirations and different dreams. And as most groups happen, they break up because of it.
But you're so cool with both.
Yeah.
He is. Yes.
They're not cool.
This is the song I thought could have blown up.
Oh, you're talking about Sincere.
Sincere.
Yeah.
It's like relatively simple looking back on it, but to me it sounded like a pop record.
Yeah, it's very, you know, from what you hear now, the Lords and all of that.
Yeah. Oh, they use the iTunes noise in there?
And Fonte sings just like a woman. No, that's not him. That's not him. He doesn't sing this.
Gonna work.
It's so sing-songy though.
That are too good don't work, man. You know this.
And then you can hear Tay rap for a second, Sai. Check it out. On a poppy record. Yo, the situation is ill. Went from loving and trusting one another to just paying our bills. From holding hands in public to displaying the grill. We need a resolution, yo, I'm saying for real. Wanna treat you with the right respect. Trying to play a bigger role than the nigga who just writes the checks and standing at the door. What'd you say?
I wouldn't do that too many times. I just wouldn't do that too many times. I would not call that man out his name.
Yeah, no, you don't get smacked. Don't get smacked in these streets. In these North Carolina streets.
Don't.
Why do I have 21 text messages?
Don't be disrespectful.
What happened? Anyways, so yeah, I love Little Brother. I love Ninth Wonder. I love Rhapsody. I'm excited to hear more from this Ad 2 solo. Gentlemen, who's this guy?
Ad 2. Ad 2's from Chicago. Ad 2 and Crisis, that you know. I released a project called Between Heaven and Hell. Which was on a lot of end of year mixtape lists this year, a ton of, as well as She Got Game, which was on XXL's top 25 mixtape this year. Only woman on there.
Only woman.
Yes.
Rhapsody. What other female MCs are out there you think we should be checking for? Give me a couple you're checking for.
Tina Apex with Pro Era.
I didn't know Tina Apex is she down with Pro Era?
Yeah, I think so. She's affiliated anyway.
Really?
I like her a whole lot. No Name Gypsy. Ill Camille out in California.
You're making me feel like shit. Anyone I've heard of. These are all people I have to check for now.
I can't do
those
this.
Those are like three of my favorites.
Wow. All right. Rhapsody, you're dope. Add two. I'm excited to check you out. This guy's supposed to give me some clean songs. So, God willing, he will.
Okay.
So, I just want to play you on the radio. That's all. I just want to play you guys on the radio.
Well, you don't make clean records?
No, he does. He does, eventually.
You know the trick to clean records, right?
So, I can give you some gems from these studios.
What's the trick to clean records?
Do it. Right then when you're recording.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like, literally, like, change the word. Like, you finish, you like that pass, go back and change the word.
We do that sometimes.
Yeah, and you got to think of me.
You should do it all the time.
If you hear a song, hear a song that you know is going to be for me. It's like,
hey, I'm doing an interview right now. Yeah, how can I help you, Ian? It's our producer, Ian. Ninth Wonder, Rhapsody, and Ad 2 from Chicago. Well, they're from North Carolina. He's from Chicago. How can I help you?
All right, yes. This doesn't seem pressing. I already said it's talking about something down the road. I mean,
it's about our TV show that we're not supposed to talk about.
Yeah, I know. Hey, so listen. So here's what I want you guys to do. Just turn the mic away from me then. Here's what I want you guys to do. Next time you're in the studio and you hear a song, you go, Rosenberg's definitely going to fuck with this one. That's when you knock out the clean right then. You're just like, boom, the clean is done. Now, the thing is, the sad part is about the life we live is there aren't even that many people who are going to take advantage of the clean in the first place.
Well, I know I have She Got Game clean, so.
You do? The whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have Between Heaven and Hell clean. To the improv show
time. Like, you're talking too loud to be in the room. You got to whisper. That's how it works. If you're going to be on the phone, you have to be at least whisper.
Yeah, at least that.
So you have a full She Got Game clean?
Yeah.
I'm going to need that from you.
Okay, cool.
All right, so guys, have fun working this Jamla album. Guys. No, it's too late. Now I'm wrapping up.
Oh, man.
Do you have any
versions? What were we talking about? Hey guys, we got a TV show coming out. We're not supposed to talk about it. Done.
You just did that?
I don't care. Fuck it.
Are you you're fucking crazy?
We gotta start promoting this shit. We gotta start promoting this. When are we gonna start promoting it? We only got a month, 2 months away.
At least our podcast listeners. We gotta start with our fans.
We got a fucking TV show coming out. It's funny as shit. It's on VH1.
We got Wi-Fi here?
No.
We just all over the place.
Nope. Since we're just going loosey goosey.
Listen, before you wrap it up, okay, listen, I'm a oblivious, ignorant.
Yep.
Non-fan.
That's right.
What do I listen to become the fan that everyone seems to be?
Of who?
Let's start Little Brother. What do I listen to?
The Minstrel Show.
That's the name of the album?
Yes.
The Minstrel Show. I pop that in, and I'm going to see what everybody's talking about.
Well, you're going to love it, especially on the theme, too. I mean, think about what it's called. Yeah. And that's what it...
Okay, I'm on
Which
it.
Is crazy, because you was in an interview... Sife was partaking.
He was okay
of in an interview when we got 10. We were the only group or the only album in Scratch Magazine to get a perfect 10. So It was an interview with you, Needles, and somebody else. And the minstrel show was one of the topics of discussion. And you spoke on it.
Huh. No, because I know I did an event with Little Brother.
Back then,
I want to say like at Best Buy. Remember like an Atlantic album release or something?
It was at, I think it was in the city, right?
It was here, yeah.
It was in
Virgin Megastore. Which is next door to where Best Buy is now.
And you were just pretending to know what you were talking about.
No, I was interested. They were mad cool.
But you didn't know.
I liked the single that they had. But I was sure that was late. Like, it was on Atlantic.
What was the lead single from the Atlantic album?
Loving It.
I was Loving It, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that song. That's not Minstrel Show, though, right?
It was off the one after Minstrel Show, right?
What?
Loving It's the lead off Minstrel Show or the next one?
Loving It's the lead off Minstrel Show.
What was the next?
So then I like it.
What was the next album called again? The last one?
It was Get Back, then Left Back.
Oh, Get Back.
Yeah.
I knew what I forgot to ask you. Can you tell us the story of Kanye going to North Carolina?
Yes. What happened with Kanye?
Kanye came to North Carolina in the summer of 2003.
Keep in mind, I know this story.
You know
this
story.
So try to give me at least a pretty good version of it.
Okay. He came to North Carolina in the summer of 2003, June of 2003, music conference. And the music conference is in Durham. And we walked in, and he's like, they were like, that's Kanye West. And, you know, walked up to him. What's going on? He said, man, little brother, I love y'all music, blah, blah, blah. Let's do a song together. And so we left and went to the studio that same day and recorded a song called I See Now, which is on the Chitlin Circuit, who we put out on Koch at the time. It was Koch Records. And that's where our relationship with Kanye started. And then after that, we performed at the Billboard R&B Awards, Hip Hop and R&B Awards in Miami. And that's when Kanye performed Through the Wire. First time I seen him perform Through the Wire, the first time.
Okay.
And he went on before us. He went on, then we went on. And it was like, that was the first time I started to notice how people really are not listening to you when they don't know who you are. And because he performed the song, and everybody was sitting down looking at him like, I don't get it. And he had the entire video of in the background and everything.
No one got it.
Then nobody got it. And that was my first time, like, this dude makes amazing music, but nobody really cares are paying attention because they don't know who he is. And then the video came, and then the rest is history after that. So our relationship starts with Kanye.
Story's not over.
No,
that's the story not over.
That wasn't the story.
It ain't over.
Why? Story about him coming to record a song, a verse for you guys.
I said he came. We recorded I See Now.
Mm-hmm. That's all you're gonna do.
What did he miss?
So far, I've seen this guy to be very truthful. So maybe.
What am I leaving out?
What I remember from that story from back then,
okay,
was that Kanye came and recorded a verse.
Uh huh.
And there was a part in the verse that Tay was not pleased with, and Fonte told Kanye, "I don't like that part." And Kanye got, there was a not good moment.
Riff.
There was a riff. And Kanye then later, I don't know if you were even there for this part. And then Kanye then called back and ended up apologizing on voicemail because he kind of freaked out at Tay when Tay told him what to do, and then was basically apologetic and was like, I'm just a huge fan of y'all's and want to, you know, make sure my
shit
is right. He had done,
I wasn't there.
He had done an ad lib or something. It was something little. It was like an ad lib, and Tay was like, "I'm just not fucking with that. Like, that's just weird. It doesn't fit."
Oh, I think you're speaking on a situation of there was something that was going on with a hook or something was happening, and I think Kanye was telling Tay to think outside the box, and Tay was like, "I don't want to think outside the box." And it wasn't a big riff like
no,
that.
No, he didn't say it was like super bad.
Right, nah,
the interesting part was just that Kanye took it very personally and seriously. That was kind of the interesting part.
Let's make no mistake.
Well, you know how those fucking assholes from Chicago are. First time I heard Ad 2 speak.
Y'all ain't opened it up for me for a while, man. Once you said that, I'm like, hold up, man. Let me get about this phone.
I just had to wake you up. Ad 2.
Hey, thank you for the intro for it, bro. Just like that, but damn.
All right, Ninth, you were about to say, you said, but let's be clear.
Let's be very clear, and I'm clear when I say this. It's going to blow, you know, all across, you know, everybody. I mean everybody in the industry. Post 2001, whether it be Kanye, whether it be 2 Chainz, whether it be Macklemore, Kendrick, anybody, everybody knows who we are, and everybody knows what we stand for, and everybody respects the ground we walk on. And that's where that came from. You know what I mean? You know, we're one of those groups that we're not cool to stay in the parties, but we're also a legend. You know, we're listed as a legendary. You know what I mean? And we influenced a whole new generation of artists, whether it be Big Sean's, whether it be Drake, whether it be TDE, whether it be Most Dope. We're very unapologetic in that. You know what I mean? But as far as our relationship with Kanye, you know, all of the quote-unquote assholisms or all of the way he acts and whatever, whatever, he only acts like that with certain people.
He was mad cool with you.
He's always cool with us. It's never a level of bow down with us, or it's never a level of, you know, this is what it is with us. Like, it's always ultimate respect. If we ever see him and we're ever around each other, it's always ultimate respect. Because we remember the Kanye when nobody gave a damn.
You were there.
Right.
And if he shows you, and if he shows you a lack of respect, you'll put him in his motherfucking place. That's what you're saying.
Pretty much. I mean, it's just because at that point, you know, all things are even. At that point, it's all about being a man and manhood. You know what I mean?
No, has anyone ever tried to test little brother?
No.
She heard the shit Odyssey was saying last time I saw him. He was like, whatever, I won't get you.
But I mean, even from the standpoint, there was a level, and there were artists from that time, whether it be Little Brother, whether it be Odyssey, whether it be Cass, know, man. They know what we started and what the legacy that we, and it is like, if you say Odyssey's name, it's not a whole lot of, I don't really rock with them, you know, blah, 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 blah. Even your best of the best be like, yeah, I know who Odyssey is. Yeah, he Odyssey. And then you leave it at that. You know what I mean? And that's the kind of...
It's a challenge, though, for people like Odyssey, who, like you guys, came from the really infancy of internet to getting, like, now Odyssey gets tons of acclaim overseas.
Right.
But getting that crossing over a bit, it's been a hard transition, even though he has such respect and he's so good.
Right.
Whereas I feel like if y'all and him, for example, had come out in just 06 instead of 03...
Right.
It would have been a very different path.
It would have been very different. I think a part of Odyssey, both of us know, you know, we really don't care about the establishment. Odyssey super does not care about the establishment. You know what I mean? He just is going to do his own thing. He's going to do his music. It's going to be what it is.
And if he got a call from Jay-Z, he'd be like, listen, I'm going to get you these beats after I finish this Diamond District album.
Exactly. That's Odyssey.
That is definitely Odyssey.
And I respect him for it.
Hey guys, the Jamla compilation is out right now.
Right.
It is called
Jamla's a Squad, hosted by Static Selector.
Which is disrespect, but I love Static. It's all right. Yo, Ad 2, Rhapsody, thank you guys for being here.
Thank you for having us, Peter.
I hope you enjoyed some of these gems from your forefather. I'm sure you've heard some of them before.
I have many of them.
Many of them. All of them?
All of them.
Anything new?
Nothing new.
Oh, thanks a lot. You know what, Rhapsody? Fuck off. Later, guys.
Hey, thanks.